So with soybean aphid, understanding the population dynamics is very essential to making appropriate management decisions. And this can, with soybean, it can be colonized very early in the season. So we see here first alate arriving. But when it comes to population dynamics and a grower perspective, what that really translates into is, will this happen to me? And if so, the next question is when. And in doing that, sampling becomes a very important component to understanding the dynamics, especially when it comes to ETs and EILs. There's been a considerable amount of work done on the top-down regulation of soybean aphid populations through the season. But some of the work from Ragsdale Lab in Minnesota, what we've been able to show is a strong bottom-up effect as well, contributing to population regulation. And in this particular slide, what I want you to focus on is really more the averages across planting dates. Looking at the top graph here, total nymphs per adult. These are individual females that are reared on upper leaves. You can see over here versus lower leaves. And what you see is a 75% reduction in the total offspring produced per female. And that's over her lifespan. What she actually sees that she's also living about half as long. So there's some strong bottom-up effects happening within the system. And so what that kind of leaves us with is, well, an aphid isn't necessarily an aphid. If you're sampling your population and you're at an economic threshold of 250 aphids per plant, 250 aphids per plant really depends on where those aphids are located and how that's going to affect the population dynamics within that next 7 days. So in developing forecasting models, it really becomes essential to account for those bottom-up effects. And that's where we're really taking this talk and bringing it into, is this even possible? And does it make sense in a management strategy? But to be honest, if you've worked with soybean aphid and you've counted a lot of soybean aphids by node, there's also some other serious effects we need to consider, and that's the mental stability of a graduate student. And that really does reduce sanity by about 22%, especially in outbreak years, because we don't have that luxury in untreated controls to just spray it and be done. Especially when we're looking at population dynamics. And these effects are also seen in the F1s, but the good thing is that these are short-lived. So where we are right now is that we're to look at a node-based sample unit, we needed to really experimentally manipulate the number of nodes that could be present at any given time. So the way we did that, we used three different study locations in Minnesota, ranging from central Minnesota to southern Minnesota, three separate counties. And the experimental design was a randomized complete block design in two of those locations with the CRD in the remaining location. To manipulate plant architecture, what we did is we used planting date, and then we also used varietal differences, so maturity groups. So ranging from a 0.6 as what we consider an early for Minnesota up to a 3.9, which isn't typically grown in Minnesota, but the idea is that we're delaying that development and actually producing more nodes that might be typical. But what's nice about that is, if, especially with a lot of the resistance work that's going on, some of these groups are not normal to, would be normal under Minnesota conditions, so it also adds that component of variability. And our response variable really was initially on a whole plant basis, but then we separated that out by node. And what I mean by node is, what we typically consider a node is where that petiole comes out and where the trifoliate is really attached to that main stem. But for this purpose, what I'm talking about is this inner node, but then also the petioles, and the trifoliate are the leaflets. So this particular node unit would include all of that as a node. So when I'm referring to a node in the rest of the talk, that's what I want you to imagine. The only two exceptions to this are the growing point, which is right above the newest fully expanded trifoliate, and the unifoliates, which are not a trifoliate. There's just two leaves associated with that. But again, this is all would be considered one unit. So if we look at how well we did in affecting the plant architecture, what we see is that here the peas just represent planting dates of early to late, which would be typically early May to mid to late June, which in Minnesota actually is a used planting day, because we oftentimes will have soybean after peas, so a planting day like that could be typically seen in Minnesota. But then here we have maturity group on this side, you know, early and late. And this is, remember, this is bringing it back to under Minnesota conditions. A potential side project might be, you know, why this particular undergraduate was not as happy, and these two needs further investigation. But you can see that architecture is quite different. These pictures were taken all on the same day. So what we see as far as within plant distribution for soybean aphid is that most of it seems to be within the top 2 to 3 nodes, at least within the first couple sample dates at all three locations. So the Dakota, Freeborn here, and then the Sherburne County. But through the time, there seems to be some shift in that distribution. And right at this point, we're kind of speculating that to be possibly host plant quality changing from, you know, R3 to R4, so plant physiology, but also top-down regulation. You might have natural enemies feeding off of the most becon or larger aphids, or it could even be other abiotic factors like rainfall events driving populations down. But again, at this point, it's speculative. So leave it to an entomologist to show that soybeans grow with time. But in each location, we did have a significant change in plant structure. What we did is we averaged across the maturity group and planting date, because it was really sample date that was the most effective when we looked at the next two variables. What I really want you to look at is the node with the lowest coefficient of variation, so where there was the least amount of variability for those nodes. And it tended to be within the top half of the plant at all three locations, usually within the first 1 to 8 nodes, depending on the size of the plant. And if you look at where the average nodal position, or this WPM, which is just calculated as an average node position where most of the aphids are located, we see a very similar trend. So we use this as a way to then say, well, most of the nodes where the aphids are occurring and have the least amount of variability are within the top half of the plant. So we then selected sample units that we felt were appropriate, and also bringing in our experience with the bottom-up effects of this newer growth up here is important and is physiologically different, or has a different impact on the aphid demographics than a node position down here. But also remember from that graphical representation of that shift in the population within the plant, we also needed sample units that were flexible. So here we call what is a NMR, so it's a midpoint remaining. So here you have three nodes above, you know, essentially a fixed node, and then three below. So there's some variability or some flexibility of where that position can be. Versus if we, you know, a sample unit of 1, 3, 7, where 7 is static, an NMR is flexible. So as that plant grows, where that midpoint remaining will actually change depending on the size or the age of the plant. But it also has to be easy to use. So that's why we use static, but we also used some variable nodes, and one of them is what we call Nmax. So we use the node with the most amount of aphids, or the greatest density, and then multiplying that by the total number of infested nodes. But there's some subjectivity involved with that, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. But since most of the work has been done on a whole plant basis, there has to be some relationship between the two, especially when EILs and ETs are based on whole plant counts. So to do that, we calculated the remaining soybean, number of aphids on remaining soybean components. So the idea is that we use only a subset of nodes to estimate what's on the remainder of the plant. So if you go out and sample select nodes, what's actually on the rest of the plant without having to sample them. So understanding that relationship is pretty important. We had two formulas to do this. The first was just more of a basic approach and taking an average of those three nodes and multiplying by the total number of nodes with leaves to get an estimate, but then we also came up with a weighted whole plant estimate, and this is looking at more the how that distribution is affected within the plant. So the first one is most closely related with itself and is most dynamic, versus 2 and 3 are closer, or a midpoint remaining would explain more of the densities. And example calculations would be, you can see they'd be quite different, but what you need to notice is that if this distribution changes, the node average doesn't change. But what does change is the weighted. So when we compare, we can't just directly compare for one particular observational unit the number estimated versus the number observed. Mainly because in the observed, we use everything on that plant. So everything above the ground, we use in that observed total. That includes the nodes that we use in the estimated total. So essentially, those are not independent from each other. To make those independent, we subtract the nodes that we use in the estimated total from the observed and the estimated, and therefore those two can then be regressed against each other. So just briefly going through these relationships, I'm not going to talk about Nmax like I said I would, but I want to focus on these last three, which are more static positions. So it's regardless of density, these are more fixed positions. And what we see with time, at least with the first values are the averaged, is that a value less than 1 means it's overestimating, a value greater than 1 means it's underestimating the densities on the remainder. And that when we add the weighted, we don't do a better job in estimating, but we do a better job in explaining the variability with that relationship in that model. But we also have tighter standard errors associated with those slope values. And briefly, in 2007, we wanted to validate these parameters, and what we find is that most of these are not significantly different from what we generated in the 2006 data. So getting into the significance of node-based sample units, in our estimation, there's a really good relationship between whole plant estimates, and this can really then lead us into developing appropriate sampling plans. The sampling plan we have now is what we call speed scouting, which is a binomial sequential sampling plan. And by no means do I want you to walk away feeling that this is the replacement to this. These are the first steps in developing a new revised plan that can account for within plant distributions. Mainly the effects of plant quality and growth rates. And with that, I would like to thank a number of people, especially the people who counted the 1,500 plants by node over the two years of the study, and the North Central region for support, and the Minnesota Soybean Growers, and the Regional Agricultural Rapid Agricultural Response Fund funded through the University of Minnesota and the Ag Experiment Station. So thank you.